reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's got a full speed.
We're back at the Radio Row here in Tampa, of course, broadcasting live all the action, the RNC, and the big speeches and whatnot. Lots of different people milling around, and we've had some great conversations today. We thought it'd be fun to talk to our pal Greg Stebbin. He is a technology guru. He even wrote the book Internet for Dummies. He's written a couple of different books, actually. And in fact, we've talked, most of the time when we talk to Greg, we talk a lot about technology. And in the technology sector, Greg, first of all, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Kate.
I love it when you said it. It's great to be here. Samsung and Apple, what happened in that war between the two of them? Explain that for the listeners who just saw the headline. Samsung and
wins
Apple.
Apple wins a $1 billion patent judgment against Samsung. $1 billion. It would be a lot to you and me. First of all, it's not the end of the world for Samsung. A lot of people were thinking, oh my gosh, they're out of the game. This is going to kill the Android phone platform. I don't believe this is as severe as that. It is a big deal, though. It's kind of like a presidential election, frankly. It's kind of like Romney versus Obama. You've got Apple, but the competitor is not Samsung, actually. Samsung's a pawn in this game. It's actually Google. Samsung makes Android phones that run on Google's Android platform. And what Apple is really doing is attacking Google because, as Steve Jobs said before he died, he believed that Google had copied the iPhone with the Android platform, and as Steve Jobs said, he was going to go thermonuclear war against Google on this. This is just the beginning, this $1 billion judgment, and Samsung's just a pawn. They're one of the companies that makes phones, and what the court found was that some of the Samsung phones looked and felt just like an iPhone. And then on top of that, the court found that inside of the phone, some of the functionality, like the pinching and pulling apart with your fingers to shrink and grow things on the screen, was also a patent infringement. But trust me, this is not over. This is not a $1 billion war. This is a billions and billions of dollars war.
And with more companies, like you're saying, because everybody's, you know, when you're the brand, people are trying to copy you. That's what they do.
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, let's not forget that since all this started, Google bought Motorola. So Google is now in the game as a hardware manufacturer with Motorola. You can bet Apple's going to go after Motorola. You can bet Apple's going to go after HTC. And then there's this other company waiting in the wings, waiting to see what's happening, and that's Microsoft. They have Windows Phone. They're trying to get some traction in the market. A lot of people believe these kind of patent wars between Apple and the Android environment is actually good for Microsoft. It's big. It's complicated. The only real winners here are going to be the lawyers.
Isn't that why there's just so many patents, that when you have a company, especially like Apple, I mean, who knows? They have probably a multitude, thousands, maybe a thousand patents.
Maybe hundreds of thousands.
Really, hundreds of, on everything,
yeah.
On parts,
sure.
On everything. You pick up an iPhone, and that's just one iPad, iPhone,
and
everything.
And not one patent on an iPhone.
Yeah.
There could be 1,000 patents,
wow,
on the iPhone.
Wow.
I mean, and lawyers and designers and engineers are always looking for that one unique little thing that, oh, let's patent that too. Maybe we'll get it, maybe we won't. I mean, look, I have filed patents. I have gone,
sure,
through the same process, not quite to the extent that Apple has, obviously, but that's one of the ways you protect yourself, and these kind of battles they're inevitable because you don't know what's out there that other people have done.
Yeah, and you're in California. I mean, you have California, New York ties, all that, so you see it. I mean, is California now the hub of technology? Or
Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley still rules?
San Francisco to San Jose.
Not Austin, Texas? Not New York?
It was never Austin, Texas. It was never It was never the what they call the Research Triangle Park area. It's been California for the last 30 years. New York gets its play because of the advertising business. L.A. gets its play because of the entertainment business. But the reality is the center of the technology universe is Silicon Valley in San Francisco.
So if you want to be a player, you really it's just like an actor. You want to be an actor, you really have to either be in New York and do the whole Broadway thing or go to L.A. That's just the way it is. Yes, there are movies produced other places, but to really break out big, if you're going big, you have to be in those places. To break out big, do you have to? I mean, we live in a virtual world.
Well, technology is different, though. You know, when you're making a movie or a TV show, you got to get all those people together in the same room with cameras.
Right.
Actually, you don't have to anymore because of technology. We have blue screen,
right?
That's
true.
You know, we could be making a movie in multiple locations. The actors could never physically see each other.
Right.
That's true in the world of technology. There's lots of virtual companies. There's lots of companies all over the country and all over the world because of things like cloud technology, which enables us to connect things through the cloud so the physical location doesn't matter. Look, Israel, huge, huge player in the world of technology. Ireland, huge, huge player in the world
really?
Of technology.
Really? Ireland?
Absolutely.
What does Ireland do?
Ireland, huge amount of technological coding, all kinds of development and advancements.
Wow.
All over the world, there are people doing wonderful and brilliant things, but the center of the business is in Silicon Valley. That's where the money is, the VCs. That's where the greatest collection of developers are, the greatest collection of ideas. But you could be anywhere in the world. And look, the Zappos guy, the guy who sold that to Amazon, and anybody who's ever bought a pair of shoes from Zappos thinks it's the greatest company ever.
Right.
He based his company in Las Vegas, and he personally has said he wants to turn Las Vegas into a technology hub.
Wow.
But anything could be a technology hub. You just need smart people with a vision and the willingness to roll up their sleeves and work.
Now, it's interesting from a different point of view. As you say, you talk about Ireland, you talk about Israel. I have a friend that lives in Sweden and says that she has to catch up to their technology. Nobody even goes into a bank, not like us, like, wow, I can, you know, oh, look, there's my ticket for the airline, that they're beyond us.
Oh, sure. You'll find lots of ways that we're in the United States behind other parts of the world, starting with Asia. You know, we've all fallen in love with text messaging over the last few years.
Sure.
Asia has been text message crazy, I don't know, 7 or 10 years, you know. They looked at us talking on phones. What a stupid idea. You know, we were slow to that party. So there's some ways in which we're very advanced, or some ways in which we're behind the game. A lot of it, you know, again, kind of delving into the political side of things, has to do with regulation and our culture. I mean, there's some things that different cultures are comfortable with and other cultures are not.
Yeah. We only have a couple of minutes left, but in looking at technology and where we are in the future, your book was Internet for Dummies.
Actually, Internet Privacy for Dummies.
Internet Privacy for Dummies. So do you have to update that book?
Well, this book is now... Look, I get paid every time somebody buys a copy of this book, but I would not recommend that you go out and buy it. It's 10, 12 years old, and it's way out of date. You could not update this book fast enough to account for the invasions of privacy on a daily basis. I mean, privacy is just that big of an issue.
Yeah. Greg Stebbin, thank you so much, as always, for stopping by. We love having you on the show, seriously. No matter what famous movie stars I could talk to, because we're always, you know, in our virtual green room, they're always waiting, but you're number one.
Oh, look who's in there now.
You're in our top five guest list, so don't worry. Don't sweat it.
That's great. It's great to be here, Kim.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. Well, there's so much to learn about the Internet. I still have to play catch-up. He talks about some of these things with these patents. I've got to look that up. Does anybody know how many patents Apple has? Can anyone answer that question? If you can, I'll give you a copy of my book, Level the Playing Field. How exciting is that? All right. So much more to come. We've just scratched the surface here on America Tonight. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment frequent basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, August 29th, 2012. Gold opened this morning at $1,663.90. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,705.34, $852.67 for a half ounce, or $426.33 for a quarter ounce. That's $1,705.34, $852.67, and $426.33.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver is going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explained this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for your free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
Every day, nearly 3,000 families enter into foreclosure and face losing their home. If you're currently behind on your mortgage, you can still avoid foreclosure. You can save your home, but you need to act now. We're Allied State Foreclosure Services. We're experts in saving homes from foreclosure. With just one phone call to us, you can stop the foreclosure process, lower your monthly mortgage payments, and save your home. Call now. The call is free with no obligation. 1-800-597-8843. Call us if you've been threatened with foreclosure, denied loan modification, or missed a payment on your mortgage. If you've been a victim of a predatory loan or are upside down on your mortgage, even if you've lost your job and you're worried about losing your home, don't wait. Call us now and let us help you save your home. You've worked hard to build a life with your family. Let us help you keep your home. Call now before it's too late. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843. 1-800-597-8843.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say that trumpet to the beat.
We're back on Radio Row here in Tampa at the Republican National Convention. Very pleased to welcome to the show, because you know I'm all about the numbers, is very pleased to welcome John Taylor. He's a Stanford economist to our little corner of the world. John, how many radio shows have you been on already? Let me guess. 10.
Pretty close.
Oh,
yeah, pretty close.
Well, you saved the best for last, just so you know, okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
As you look at this election, and it's all about the numbers, even the Democrats are talking about the numbers, and, of course, the Republicans are talking about the numbers. And the one thing that constantly we are always talking about on America Tonight is the deficit and where we're headed with the deficit. The clock at the convention, well, not the convention center, the forum, where everything's happening, all the speeches and whatnot, has the digitized seconds, keeps going what the deficit is. How serious, I mean, it's almost a layup question to ask you this, but it's how serious are we getting to the point of almost no return? I mean, how far can we go with this deficit? We're not paying on any of the principal of this. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, we can't get much further this way. We really have to make the correction. And actually, the sooner they make the correction, the easier it'll be. Right now, you just have to slowly reduce the big expansion of government we've had in the last couple of years, and that'll bring down the debt. Get the economy moving more rapidly, that'll produce more revenue. So we can address it, but we can't wait too much longer or we're going to get into a difficult situation like they've seen in Greece.
All right, and so when you say we can't wait too much longer, if you had to timetable it, I mean, are we saying...
You never can timetable things that perfectly, but I'd say, geez, you know, 3-4 years or 5 years, if we don't make a correction, it's going to come very fast. And then, besides that, it just gets worse and worse and worse. So then that's when you talk about your children and your grandchildren, and I bring my grandchild to class to show the kids the chart so they can really understand it.
And so, and you're right, because you're saying, look, here's the growth of my grandchild, right? And
right.
Here's where we'll be if we don't keep doing this. So as you listen to what's being said, because it's politicized beyond belief, of course, the deficit, you take the axe and just cut the spending. We just have to gut it. What would be your solution to the crisis? What's the way to claw out of this where it can be, it's not going to be comfortable, but somewhat comfortable for maybe both sides, we'll say.
Yeah, you know, it's not like a hatchet or an axe or something like that. It's just common sense. Here's the way to think about it. You like numbers?
Yeah.
In 2007, federal spending as a share of our GDP, a good way to measure it, was 19.7%. And then we've had this spending boom binge over the last 3 or 4 years. It's now 23-24%. So from 19.7 to 23-24, it's a gigantic increase. All we have to do is bring it back to where it was in 2007. That shouldn't be so hard. What government agency couldn't go back to the spending levels it did then? So that's the way to think about it. And actually, that's what's in the Romney plan. Just bring it back to 20% of GDP, slowly, gradually, and that does the trick.
Yeah. So obviously you embrace some of the things that you're seeing from Romney and looking at listening to what he's saying. And, of course, as you know, if Romney were to be elected, we'd also have to be concerned about the legislative branch, because then that's the other part of it. Why? I mean, maybe this is just another silly question, but what I don't understand is, forget the labels for a second, how is it that the people who represent us, when they sit there year after year putting a Band-Aid on a budget, we know even as homeowners, as families, that you can't do that. What comes in and what goes out, eventually it crashes and burns. Why have we continued to see that happen and to let it happen?
You know, the numbers are so big, they're hard to understand, but if it was a family, it would be the same, be so straightforward. But politicians have incentive to kick things down the road. You know, let's not deal with the hard problems, let's wait to those problems. And plus, you have a lot of interests who'd like to keep spending higher. They'd like to grow government by huge amounts, and so they're in that debate. But I think you're right, you put it in the context of a family has started spending too much, what do? You go back to where you were before. It wasn't that difficult, and that's what we have to do.
When we look at some other numbers, we hear the plans for what happens to the Bush tax cuts if they're not extended and we go off the so-called fiscal cliff. Somebody said to me today, oh, it's not a cliff, it's an abyss. What would you term it as we head in this direction at the end of the year?
Well, I don't want to go over a cliff or into an abyss. I don't know which is worse. They're both terrible.
They are.
And you know, the most important thing to remember about that cliff or abyss, it didn't come from outer space. It didn't come from Mother Nature. It came from the politicians. They put it in place. These policies are very temporary. You know, we'll do a temporary tax cut. We'll do a temporary cash for clunkers. We'll do a temporary this and that. And then the temporary comes to the end and you're stuck with a cliff. So they got to fix that. That's one of the biggest problems in this economy in the last 3 or 4 years. All these temporary, short-term things which really haven't got the economy going. Once you put something in place that's longer term, like a tax reduction or a pledge not to increase taxes, then the economy will start growing again.
The other thing that we hear from manufacturers, I talked to one of the heads of manufacturing today, and he was telling me that I say on my show, well, if you cut the corporate tax rate, it has to be below 25% or really lower. And he said the same thing. He said, you know, you're the first person to say or lower. It has to be lower. It has to be in the teens. But what are the odds of either party being elected being able to do that?
Well, let's do first things first. The rate is so high now, basically the highest in the world for all intents and purposes.
Right.
So getting it out to 25 at least brings us back into the realm of reasonableness in terms of the... And I believe now with the potential of this economy, what's happening more broadly, that would help tremendously in terms of creating jobs and really providing more opportunities for people. So I start with that, and then if it works out, go further. But, you know, you got to do what's possible, and that would be a tremendous improvement over where we are now.
And I think it's possible. You obviously think it's possible as an economist in looking at it, but why is it Is it, again, just the same thing we're saying? It's the this is my territory and I don't want to deal with the hard problems. Do we need more economists in Washington? Do we need better economists? Do we need better money people?
I think we need more common sense. We need people who see the problem that the debt is growing, and the tax rates are too high, and our competition is doing good, and our economy is growing so slowly, and our unemployment is so high. All those things tell you to go back to some basics. Get the debt under control. Get your tax rates like, well, we haven't had tax reform since 1986, and that was a powerful incentive for this. We need another one.
When I look at the Federal Reserve, you know, Ron Paul, there was some ruckus the other night with his delegates who were passionate about Ron Paul. And one of the things that he talks about is eliminating the Federal Reserve and doesn't like, you know, Ben Bernanke and, of course, with the playing around with the interest rates. Or, to me, the thing that I think is more, even more offensive is the money that we're printing, the quantitative easing, and it's like monopoly money. We don't even know what it is. We don't know what the number is. How is that dangerous in your mind?
Yes. I think the quantitative easings have not been effective, and they raise all sorts of risks about inflation down the road or about the economy slowing down again as they try to remove these huge amounts of money from the economy. Here again, we have some good history about what to do. And you know, in the 80s and 90s, we didn't do all this kind of thing.
Right.
We had a pretty much what I call rules-based policy. The Fed operated pretty well. We had good economic growth. We didn't have these recessions and crises. It's just recently we've had this kind of very discretionary, again, I'd say short-term monetary policy, which includes things like the quantitative easing. So that's another part of an important reform that we need to have, is get back to the kind of policies that worked well in much of the 80s and 90s. Of course, the world's different. You can't go back exactly, but you can have that philosophy that worked so well then.
Yeah. How about the, I wanted to turn to Wall Street for a second. How about the push-pull over Glass-Steagall?
Well, Glass-Steagall gets a lot of the blame for the crisis. I think he could blame the crisis on a lot of things. Once the Fed had those interest rates very low in 2003, 2004, 2005, encouraged a search for yield, encouraged a lot of speculation in the housing market. And then I think just generally the rules weren't followed in terms of the banks. We had these regulatory rules and regulatory agencies. They basically didn't enforce them. So before we go back and make big changes, in fact, I think is a real reason to reconsider that gigantic Dodd-Frank bill, which includes a lot of changes and a lot more regulations. Go back and reconsider that and take into account what actually happened in the financial crisis.
Yeah. LIBOR.
Oh, LIBOR. LIBOR is this crazy thing where the banks would fill out a survey, then we'd base trillions of dollars of loans on that survey. Now we're realizing that the survey wasn't filled out quite right, and we've got to fix that. It's unfortunate because you need trust in the financial system. It's an important part of the financial system, is trust. When you lose that, you lose a lot. So they really need to get some credibility back in there, get another kind of rate to measure. It'll be okay.
I agree. John, thank you so much. It was nice meeting you. Stanford, I'm so jealous. Oh, I love California. I'll be back with more in just a second.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later, and the Door Sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We've all heard the phrase, don't judge a book by its cover. A wise saying for sure. Now apply that wisdom to nutrition. Don't judge milk by the animal.
Camel Milk, the best-kept health secret ever. See for yourself at CamelMilkForSale.com and look for the Summer Camel Milk Special. Loaded with health benefits far superior to other milk, Camel Milk has antibacterial, antiviral, and anti-tumor properties, is rich in B vitamins, and is 3 times higher in vitamin C than cow's milk, 10 times higher in iron. Plus, it contains 52 units of insulin-like proteins per liter, effectively lowering blood sugar levels. Many of our members testified that drinking Camel Milk reversed diabetes and greatly improved autism. Camel Milk comes fresh or frozen from your trusted local family farm, shipped on dry ice to preserve freshness. Go to CamelMilkForSale.com now and look under products and pricing for the summer special with free bonus pints. That's CamelMilkForSale.com.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include micro plant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
What do you do when your propane runs out and you don't have a large amount of wood for cooking? That's when you need a Grover Rocket Stove from StockStorage.com. The Grover Rocket Stove starts easily with any combustible material, like junk mail, small twigs, leaves, weeds, or dry sagebrush. Then just add a small amount of kindling wood and you'll be cooking entire meals in minutes. Grover Rocket Stoves are made right here in the USA and are built to last a lifetime using heavy-duty thick-gauge steel and are painted with high-temp paint to withstand heat. Go to StockStorage.com and see 3 great Grover Rocket Stoves, stainless steel, heavy-duty, or our original Grover Rocket Stove for only $135, and get free shipping to the lower 48. For phone orders, call 801-361-6984 or go to StockStorage.com. That's 801-361-6984 or StockStorage.com. The original Grover Rocket Stove minimal wood-use cooking stoves, available exclusively from StockStorage.com.
Here we are continuing our broadcast from Radio Row in Tampa, Florida, the Republican National Convention. Oh, you guys are going to love this. Guess who's sitting down with me? Newsbusters. Who's Newsbusters? Mark Finkelstein and Noel Shepard are here. Hi, guys. How are you?
Great to be with you.
Good. How are you?
Did you hear that? They both said, great to be with you.
Great to be with you.
All right, so let's talk about Newsbusters. Let's bust some news. Give me some scoop.
Well, we've got a nice little scoop this morning. Well, actually, it happened a couple of days ago. There was an ABC shared webcast with Yahoo, and the Washington bureau chief of Yahoo actually was caught saying with a picture of the Romneys that they like to party when black people are drowning.
Oh.
And he has already been fired. This was the Washington bureau chief of Yahoo. His name is Dave Chalian.
Right, so he didn't realize that anybody was going to see that.
He was on a hot
that.
Mic, so yeah. He wasn't actually doing the broadcasting, but it got picked up. We covered it. It's now all over the place, and he's been fired, and we're not happy to hear that he's been fired.
Right.
But, you know, this is, quite frankly, the problem that we're seeing with this convention and the media coverage is that they're trying to paint the GOP, the Republicans, as being a lily-white party. I'm sure you heard yesterday on MSNBC they decided to not show any of the minority presenters, with the exception of Nikki Haley. The black presenters, the Hispanic presenters, were not shown at all on MSNBC. Why might that be? Could it be that it fits their narrative that we supposedly are a lily-white party? And it's really quite offensive if what they're going to do is they're going to edit out all of our minorities so that they can claim that we're all white. That doesn't seem right.
And for that matter, you know, if they want to play the racism card, who's being racial in suppressing the voices of black and Hispanic people?
So, right.
My focus this morning was to see how the mainstream media covered what happened last night. And so what better place to start than the editorial page of the New York Times?
I was going
to
ask you that.
And
what
sure
did you
enough,
think?
Andrew Rosenthal had an item. Now, for those of us who are either in the hall or watching at home, your listeners, we saw Ann Romney, a warm, caring, and kind person. How did Andrew Rosenthal, editorial page editor of the New York Times, depict her this morning? That she slipped a knife into Barack Obama. You know, so that sort of violent, ugly imagery, that's how the Times depicted Ann Romney.
Which that was not at all the speech. Not the one I'd have to go back and listen to it again.
It was bringing tears to people's eyes as she identified with the trials and tribulations that women face and the way that they are heroes, day in, day out heroes. He saw her slipping a knife into Barack Obama.
Wow.
The interesting part of that is, if you remember, in January of 2011, after Gabby Giffords was shot,
right.
We were told that we needed to have a more civil media. Well, it's not really civil when the editorial page editor of the New York Times is accusing Ann Romney of slipping a knife into Obama's back, when all she was saying was extremely nice things about herself, extremely nice things about her family, and in particular, extremely nice things about her husband. Horrors.
Would you say, and this is a conversation I have with the listeners on America Tonight all the time, this is their bread and butter, and constantly, what's going on with the media, you know, when you know, is there liberal bias in the media?
Of course there isn't. You know, I've had interesting conversations today, both with Michael Medved and just now with Jim Pinkerton. Both of them said something very similar, that in certain ways, the thrill is gone for the mainstream media with Obama. They don't love him and adulate him in the same way that they might have in 2008, but ideologically they identify so closely with him that they'll do what they need to do to try to drag him across the finish line in November.
Yeah. The as you look at, you know, the coverage last night, you were talking about that. NBC of the mainstream
of the broadcast networks.
Thank you. The broadcast networks. They're like dinosaurs, so I can't even remember anymore because everybody watches cable. They got the highest ratings, 5.3 million. ABC 2.3. So is ABC, or, you know, I'm just wondering if there's anything in that or no, that ABC is.
Well,
just,
no. I mean, is it possible that as a result of the error made by, and I'm trying to remember his name, Brian Ross, if you recall, shortly after the Aurora shooting that morning, he actually goes on with George Stephanopoulos and suggests that the shooter was a Tea Party member. So is it possible that, I mean, you know, when you've got a Republican convention, most people that are watching are Republicans or independents. Democrats aren't typically watching. So let's assume you don't have cable, so you can't watch it on Fox, you can't watch it on CNN. You've got a choice between the three networks. Is it possible that as a result of Brian Ross's comments, and George Stephanopoulos, of course, working for Clinton,
yeah,
that a lot of Republicans say, I really don't want to watch ABC at this point in time. Maybe I'd rather watch NBC. No. It's possible.
Yeah.
Not that NBC is any great bargain. I mean, of course, Brian Williams was a former Carter staffer, and there was the famous moment where he seemed to almost bow himself when he met Obama, you know, shortly after the election in 2008. So, you know, nothing to think that Brian Williams is not part of that same mainstream media. But it's not an easy choice. That's why, you know, Fox has been so successful. That's why alternative media like Newsbusters, I think, has become more and more attractive to people.
And that's what I was going to ask you. So Newsbusters, you've seen that. Is it because people are tired of that? They want something that's balanced. They want as much of nuggets of the truth that they think they can get.
It's not balanced. They want truth, and they want the biases of the mainstream media exposed, and that's what we do at Newsbusters.
Who are the worst offenders, in your opinion? Noel, who are the worst offenders?
Oh, well, of course, MSNBC. But MSNBC is not a news network. And it really is offensive from a journalistic standpoint to have them so proximate on our cable dials to CNN and Fox and CNBC. this is clearly an arm of the Democrat Party, has been, and obviously I mean that figuratively.
They
are so in the tank for Democrat and Democrat causes and liberal causes, and they're not even really embarrassed about it or trying to hide it. It's very, very obvious. So you really almost at this point can't count MSNBC because it's just flat news. As far as the broadcasts, it's difficult to assess because they change. I mean, a couple of months ago, I probably would have said, or a year ago, I probably would have said CBS was the most liberal of the three. Now I think NBC has been dragged in the MSNBC direction, and even though they did really well last night, and I'm not sure why they did, I think NBC right now is probably the most liberal of the three. If we look at the Today Show, if we look at the evening news broadcast, what do you think, Mark?
As you say, there's really, you know, I wouldn't want to have to choose among them, and that's why their audiences have continued to shrink over the years. I just think, fortunately, they're much less of a factor than they used to be. Certainly when it comes to print, the New York Times, I would say, is the worst offender. And, in fact, their own ombudsman just a week ago said that their liberal editorial slant permeates right down to the front page, and it forced their senior editor to deny that. But, you know, anyone with eyes who can read the New York Times knows that it's true.
Romney, in the coverage of Romney, what do you think is the biggest myth or lie or non-truth that you've heard bantered around the most?
Boy, the biggest one. Well, I mean, certainly, actually, I would say Bain has been very poorly characterized, because most of the people who are investors in Bain are pension funds,
yeah,
state pension funds.
Mm-hmm.
Bain does good things. The companies that Bain invested in do good things. I mean, everybody talks about Staples, but there are a lot of other companies that are associated with Bain. Bain really did great stuff. And what the media have done as a result of conceivably the Occupy Wall Street movement and all of the targeting of banks and brokerage firms and Wall Street in general as being bad people, they've depicted Bain as this awful, terrible thing, and anybody associated as being awful and terrible. But, you know, it's public pension funds that invest a lot of money in Bain. Maybe we could report that a little better.
Yeah. Mark, what do you think?
I would say it's the way that Romney has been portrayed by the mainstream media as being an uncaring, ungiving person. In fact, he is almost undoubtedly the most charitable presidential candidate in the history of the United States, and both not only in terms of money, but also in terms of his time and in the way that, you know, his life is a life of helping others, both on an individual and on a private level, as well as through his work with the Winter Olympics in Utah. So I think, in fact, there is a huge distortion on Mitt Romney the man, and hopefully we're going to, you know, I think Ann Romney made a wonderful first step last night, and hopefully we'll see more of that culminating in his acceptance speech on Thursday.
Yeah.
Actually, I would take that a step further. I think that if the Democrat Party had a candidate like a Mitt Romney, who had been so philanthropic with his funds, had spent time, as Mark said, running the Olympics, has business experience and 4 years as a governor, is there really anybody that we've seen in decades that we could say has more diverse experience to be president than this man? I don't think so. And then the other side, and Mark and I were talking about this yesterday as we were walking into the convention center, if the Romneys were Democrats, the media would be going absolutely nuts over Ann.
Right, because of how she looks.
More nuts than they went for Jacqueline Kennedy,
mm-hmm,
because she's such a wonderful, giving, incredible mother of mm-hmm five, great children,
mm-hmm,
breast cancer survivor, MS survivor. You add all of this up, if this was a Democrat, she'd be on every cover of every magazine. They'd be doing puff pieces about her. But because she's a Republican, they made fun of the fact that she rides horses as a therapy. And they didn't. And what was interesting, we were talking about this as well, is they didn't even bother to investigate that, you know, we use horse therapy for our returning soldiers from Iraq and Afghanistan.
You're right.
This is actually a very, very common therapy And instead of doing the slightest bit of examination and investigation into it to find out how common it is, and it's not just for rich people.
You guys are terrific. I could talk to you the whole show. I mean, you're just great. Noel, Mark, Newsbusters, you're terrific.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, listen carefully. Sweeping changes to IRS policies will help more people than ever eliminate their tax debts once and for all. And now, thanks to Dan Pilla, you can get the tax help you need to end your tax nightmare.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I've helped thousands of people reduce or eliminate tax debts they couldn't pay. And after more than 30 years of experience dealing with the IRS, I can tell you there's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. With the IRS's new policies, it's easier than ever to put your tax debt behind you once and for all. Call now at 800-346-6829 to learn how I can help you. You know your IRS debt will not go away by itself, but you don't have to live in fear anymore. Call 800-346-6829. Learn how I can help you eliminate wage and bank levies, release tax liens, and negotiate a settlement with the IRS that will put your tax nightmare behind you forever. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, taxhelponline.com. That's taxhelponline.com.
Would it save you time to get the best quality water filters and the best quality storable foods from one company? You bet it would, and now you can at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Big Berkey Water Filter products and great-tasting, long-lasting, storable, wise foods are both now available on one website, BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. Wise foods, ready-to-eat meals are packed in airtight nitrogen pouches and come with a 25-year shelf life. Big Berkey Water Filters are powerful enough to purify treated, untreated, or even stagnant pond water. Combine Berkey Water Filters with Wise Foods for an unbeatable preparedness combination. Get free shipping on every order over $50. And GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Or go to BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com.
In this unpredictable world, disaster can strike anyone. That's why an essential part of any emergency survival plan must be stove in a can. When power goes out and gas lines are down, the portable, safe, easy-to-use stove in a can cooks food up to 4 hours and boils water in as little as 5 minutes. Stove in a can comes with everything you need. The stove, fuel, even waterproof matches, all in a compact, durable, heavy-duty container. Plus, the all-natural, non-explosive, 100% waterproof fuel source can be stored indefinitely. Say goodbye to the hassle and danger of propane, lighter fluid, or gas. Stock up now and protect your family with Stove in a Can, starting out at $29.99. Special bundle offers now available with a 100% satisfaction guarantee or your money back. Order yours today at StoveInACan.com. That's StoveInACan.com.
On America Tonight, of course, we're going to update you on what's happening with Isaac. A lot of reporters in raincoats, and it looks like a lot of palm trees and whatnot are bent backwards, but so far, the levees are more than holding up in New Orleans, which is very, very good news. We're broadcasting live from Tampa, the Republican National Convention, and sitting with me here on Radio Row is Jeffrey Van Orden, and you're going to love this guy. Why are you going to love this? Because we talk about money constantly. We have all kinds of economists and experts on the show. He is actually a EU member of Parliament, and here he is with us. How lucky are we? Jeffrey, thanks for popping by.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure to join you, and lovely to be here in Tampa.
It is lovely to be here, isn't it? We missed the Isaac stuff. We just got a little rain. That was nice, wasn't it?
Well, it was, yes. I've never been in a hurricane, so I was just wondering what it was going to feel like, but I won't have that experience.
Now, you had Monday, so you were probably resting and whatnot. You didn't go to Busch Gardens or any of that, did you?
Yeah. No, we were out at, but we were at Busch Gardens. Yeah. Well, not actually in Busch Gardens, but our hotel's just near there.
Yeah. Oh, so you could see like the chimpanzees climbing up the hotel, or
almost.
almost. Let's talk about the EU. And for...
If you must.
If we must, exactly. You know, we watch the stock market and we keep hearing the what's going to happen, what's the collapse of Greece and the bailout twice and whatnot. First of all, Greece. I'll ask you the question about Greece. I mean, is Greece done? That's it. Forget it now.
It is. And many would say that they're trying to, and there's almost a conspiracy, to put off the fatal moment until after November. Because there will be shockwaves if Greece was to leave the Eurozone. But many feel, and I'm among them, that until Greece does leave the Eurozone, we're never going to break out of this crisis. And in fact, it's not just Greece. The Eurozone actually ought to split in two. You ought to have, on the one hand, what I call the olive economies, and on the other hand, the hard economies of Northern Europe. And those olive economies ought to be allowed to float, have their own exchange rates and interest rates, so that their economies can start growing again.
So I love that analogy, olive and hard. Give us examples of olive, like Ireland.
Well, funnily enough, it would be in that category, but you're talking about Greece, Portugal, Spain. I mean, the big question is France an olive economy or not? And that's why this solution is not going to happen, I have to say. Because don't forget that the Euro project is first and foremost a political project.
Right.
It's all about integrating Europe politically. And that's, you know, they fear that if somewhere like Greece was to leave and other countries were to leave, this would herald the breakup of the Eurozone and indeed the whole EU idea. And others might then follow, you see. So they're very concerned not to go down that particular track.
But how many bailouts can, it's like the IMF, how many bailouts can you possibly have until you just break in half anyway?
Well, the real question is, for how long is the German taxpayer willing to fund the, you know, the beach resorts of Greece? And, you know, if you're German, you retire at 65 or whatever. In Greece, you retire at 52. So for 13 years, your German credit card is maxing out on looking after the leisurely life of Greek retirees. Now, I don't think the German taxpayer is going to tolerate that much longer.
Right. You look at the IMF. You look at Christine Lagarde. How would you place her among, you know, her predecessor before her, and then she steps into what's happening now and is, I guess, trying to play Solomon in a way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in spite of the fact that she's French, she seems to be quite a reasonable and very straightforward and quite sensible head of the IMF. IMF, of course, is one of those respectable organizations. But we've got to make sure that the UK, for example, isn't pouring money into the IMF, which is then going to end up supporting the Eurozone. Mm-hmm. That's something we're very concerned about.
Yeah. And when you say we're very concerned, and you're an EU member, explain to people the Parliament and how that works, how many members, etc.
Yeah, how long have you got? Well, there are 732 members. They come from 27 member states. You're the number of representatives from a member state depends on population, or not exclusively, but largely on population. So, for example, the United Kingdom has 72 members. Mm. Germany has 99. But, I mean, after that, the UK and then France and is similar numbers as well, and Italy. And then you get right down to a country like Luxembourg, which just has three or four members. And then we're organized in political groups in the European Parliament. So as a British Conservative, I found myself, to my horror, when I was first elected, sitting with a group called the European People's Party, which is supposed to be a centre-right grouping, but actually believes in all the things about Europe which we really don't believe in, like a European constitution, like the euro, like an EU seat at the United Nations, like a European FBI, a European army, all of these sorts of things. So about 2 years ago, after a lot of effort, and it was very difficult, we managed to form our own new political group. of European conservatives and reformists. We now have 55 members in our group from 8 different countries. The solid core of it is British conservative, and we're the people who are represented here in Tampa this week.
And watching the American elections and what's unfolding here, because now we have, you know, 68 days to go before November 6th, and you hear pretty much, you know, what's going on with Romney and Ryan and the direction they'd like to see the country go, and then what's happening with the current administration. From your point of view, and certainly Obama has been to many of these meetings, crisis meetings, etc., that deal with the EU, who would you prefer in place?
I would prefer Romney in place. I have to say that the European media generally haven't paid a lot of attention to Mitt Romney. Maybe they will now. And when they have paid attention, it's generally been unfairly negative. I think for a lot of Europeans, they thought that Obama was going to be more well-disposed. I mean, I think many people felt that the W. Bush years were not helpful in terms of foreign policy, in terms of America's international image. And a change was needed, and a lot of people greeted Obama with enthusiasm. But like as I'm finding here with American people, that enthusiasm has somewhat dulled as the years have gone by. And people like me would be very concerned if we saw the United States losing its competitive edge, losing that great get-up-and-go mentality, losing that opportunity mentality that you have here, and that's been what you've built your great success on. So the more you become, if you like, socialized or Europeanized, as some describe it, I think that's going to be seriously to your detriment. And so, I mean, I've met a lot of Mitt Romney's close advisors and people close to him. I've been to some very good briefings in the last few days. I'm very encouraged by what I've heard, and I will be taking a very positive message back to the UK. But the fact is that the UK media is not giving Mitt Romney a fair wind. And I have to say, you know, when he came to the UK recently, that, you know, there was just one or two unfortunate quotes there, and that didn't go as well as it might have done. But I think Mitt Romney is a very impressive candidate. This convention is all about getting to know him, and I think that's as true for the Europeans as it is for the Americans.
Yeah, I agree with that, by the way.
Yeah.
If we watch, too, now what's unfolding, we see the other financial crises, what's happened with Wall Street, and, you know, back in 2008, the banks too big to fail. And now LIBOR, and what's happening there. How concerned are you about that?
Well, very, because, I mean, particularly as a Brit, the financial sector, the City of London, is perhaps some would say a disproportionately large chunk of our GDP. It's very important to us. And therefore anything which damages the reputation of the City of London is to be much regretted. And I think all these things haven't helped. And we've got to really work very hard now to re-establish our firm credentials that City of London is the place to come and do business.
Do you feel, in looking at Cameron and his years as the Prime Minister, do you think he's promoting that? How would you term him on a scale of 1 to 10 business-wise?
Well, I think in his heart, I've put him at about 8 or 9 in business-wise. He's got a very difficult job. I mean, his top concern is fighting the deficit, and that means you've got to introduce very unpopular measures. Not only that, unnaturally, we're in a coalition with a political party which on many issues is our 180 degree opposite to us. So I'm under no illusions about the difficulties that David Cameron faces as a Prime Minister. I do think, and I've said this to him, that we need to see a little bit more red meat in order to encourage our conservative activists and grassroots, if you like.
Jeffrey Van Orden, very nice to meet you. What a
great,
lovely conversation.
Great pleasure.
Thank you.
Good luck to you all.
Thank you so much.
Alex Jones here with a great way to beat the blackouts, get off the grid, and generate your own supply of electrical power. Folks, with what's been going on in this country, I don't have to tell you about the power grid and just how vulnerable it is. That's in the mainstream news every day. Millions of people have lost their power in the last few weeks because of dangerous storms and killer heat that's pushing the grid beyond its capacity. I've always said that every family needs to be ready for blackouts. And if you don't have a backup system in place, I've got a great opportunity for you. Right now, our good friends at Solutions from Science are offering huge savings on their best-selling Power Hub unit. In fact, I think it's the best deal I've ever seen them make. It's literally thousands of dollars in savings. Remember, these backup systems don't need gas because they're solar powered. That means there's no dangerous fumes and no noise. InfoWars listeners can get all the details at beattheblackouts.com. That's beattheblackouts.com.